Thank y'all so much for taking the time to come to basically just share with each other. So when I was given the description for this workshop, and you know, it was given what does it mean to thrive in urban ministry? And I struggled with that. And you'll understand why in a minute, I hope. And so I tried my best. I'm a mix between gangbanger and engineer and business owner. You put those together, you create a hot mess. That's me. So I like my strategic planning. I like mission objective strategy tactics. I like SWOT analysis. I like looking at numbers. I got more numbers running through my brain than the average human should ever have. But at the same time, I'm just all over the place, okay? So when I think about this stuff, I'm just like, when I do workshops and things, I can get very technical, or I can go very on the opposite end. I typically stay technical, and for some reason, I just really felt that not to get so technical today. And not so many, I could talk about programs for literally the next 10 days. That's what I do, develop systems and programs. But this, to me, when they gave me the definition with nothing else, just to say, what does it thrive? I'm sorry, I didn't go to programming. I didn't go to systems. I didn't go to structures. I just went to some basic things. And I think if we're looking at best practices, we're going to have, at the end of this, my hope is that we have about 15 minutes. I would love to dive in more about some best practices. God has given me an opportunity to travel the world and exegete urban context. That's what I do. And so I would love to talk about that with you and my limited experience in planting urban churches and serving our urban communities. But I do just want to talk through what I have here. And if I waste your time, we can fight later. I would love that, actually. We can get it in. As my brother said, I'm married now 23 years, a bunch of children. Of which, you know, four of them are biological, and then the remainder are boys that God has sent over into my life over the last couple of decades. And so I've had the pleasure of raising a pretty big family of people, and we're and that'll make sense in a minute. But can everybody hear me? I have a tendency of talking low. Let's tell you a little bit about the Edge, because there's a lot of urban legend out there about what we do or don't do, the hip hop pastor, dude, whatever. So the Edge is a church, and we relevantly reach the hip hop culture for Christ, period, without apologies. I gave ourselves and people have given us a label as a hip hop church, which is kind of true. But if you come, you'll see in our liturgy, everything that we do, you'll see the infrastructure, you'll see the church. You'll forget that it's even 99% hip-hop music played for worship, believe it or not. The church is very multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-generational. So it's not mono anything, which creates another hot mess. Amen? Anybody else serving a multi-everything church? It ain't as sexy as it looks in the books, right? But then we moved, my wife and I, we planted four churches that we personally pastored in urban settings in Detroit and Grand Rapids. And we've assisted, dozens of churches, urban churches and any churches to plant. But, so it was awkward for us, this move in the church we planted called The Edge. We moved our location into a community that's 70% Latino. If you haven't noticed, I'm not Latino. I could be a darker Cuban, you know, but I'm not. Though my godfather is Cuban, first generation Cuban, and I was raised 30% of my life with him. I'm more Cuban than I am. I cook like a Cuban man. I do. I really do. But I'm not Cuban, and so I'm not. This is not my. These are my people, but they don't know it. You get what I'm saying? So we're placed here in this multi-ethnic, multi-generational, multi-everything church in a 70% Latino community. And we're expected to do all kinds of stuff, you know, say do all this outreach stuff and then they'll come, you build and they come. That sounds great. But when they trickle in there one at a time and then one out of 10 actually sticks around, that sucks. You feel me? That sucks. And we do all kinds of stuff to reach the community and all that. By God's grace alone, cause I fell to seventh grade 3 times, never seen a high school day in my life. I learned to read when I was in my 20s. Barely can read now. So all of I'm about to tell you has nothing to do with me. Understand that. I come with the empty slate. But God's grace is good. You feel me? We literally impact, no exaggeration, tens and thousands of people all over the world. God has done something with these young people, and we've deployed people. I go, we go, and we just, and literally first-time conversions, we can't keep up. We just can't. And I want to share with you some of those things that we put in place to help us to do that. So let me see what else I got. Okay, I got to tell you about our staff structure in order to do what we do. We have 6 full-time staff members. We have 6 part-time staff members. And then we have 40 unpaid staff members. I run the IT department for the American Red Cross. It was fascinating the language that they use for staff. You walk through the American Red Cross, you'll find out that you won't know who's staff and who's not, who's paid and who's not, because they call them paid and unpaid staff. And we just adopted that as a church. It raised awareness. That means I will fire you. Right? I mean, that means we go through some 3 or 4 C's to determine whether or not we don't just look for warm bodies. Raise it a little bit. So, but you need to understand that because we do a lot of things, but it takes a lot of people to do what we do. But when it comes to money, and it's very difficult to explain the money situation to people because they want to know with our budget and the size of our church, why do you need so many people? Because we impact tens of thousands of people all over the world. That's why. Right? So what I want to talk about today is between thriving and surviving. And I'm going to talk about it, and it's going to make you move and flinch a little bit, because I'm going to talk about it from a weird perspective, because I don't think they're enemies. Especially in this context. We're talking about urban context. They are not enemies. Forget what you've read. Those two are not enemies. And I want to talk about that today. So let me give you a little bit more background. I have 3 world champion fighters in my family. One of them, my family would be my god brother. His name is Kit Chocolate. Let me see, Pete, he has 34 fights, 1 loss, 1 draw, 29 knockouts. A world champion fighter. You may have heard the other one, my little cousin's name is Lil Floyd. Floyd Mayweather and his dad and blah, 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 blah. So we grew up in a very strange place. All right? You ever watch any Floyd Mayweather's videos of him playing outside when he was little? That was my house, okay? So it's like we grew up in a very strange, strange place. We grew up in the street called Francis. My first trainer was a dude by the name of Buster Mathis. Have you ever heard of him? He fought Ali in Garden. So we all went to Pride Boxing Gym. We went to this place. And so I grew up doing that. My mother's a martial artist. Can you imagine that? Right? And my mama did not spare the rod. You feel me? She'll break down and just throw some leg kicks. You know what I'm saying? A karate bow. It was pretty weird. I've ran track. I wrestled took city twice. I've done just about every strange sport, multiple martial arts styles. You name it. We've done it. Right? Recently I joined this place, called Fit Body Boot Camp. It was a lot easier 30 years ago. You know what I'm saying? I trained my son. He's the Golden Glove champion. I train him. I know this stuff, right? Cognitively, I understand it. I get it. You know what I'm saying? But my muscles ain't moving like they used to. And if you know anything about training, they call it HIIT training now, but back in the day, you just did multiple things so that you can cut body fat and then gain lean muscle mass. That's the way fighters train, right? So you do this stuff and you do HIIT training. None of you, I don't care how good of a shape you're in, you'll never master it. Because what's happening is that you're always changing. You're doing intervals. So you're doing something for a minute, and then you take a breather for 30 seconds, do something for a minute, and then they change it up tomorrow. So you never get used to it. You never get to a place where you master it. I liken that to urban ministry. Okay, how long you been doing it? You got all the world belts. You can be certified in it. You can be all this stuff. I'm some CCDA trainer, president of the CCDA chapter in Grand Rapids. Blah, 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 blah. That don't mean jack when it comes to this. Because it's ever changing. It's ever evolving. Some dude's going to walk, Will, if you haven't seen this yet, just wait a minute. Somebody's going to walk in there as soon as you think you got it. Soon as you think you're a subject matter expert, some dude's going to walk in there and rock your world. His story, the way that he's going about ministry, the way he's going about life, the way he's turned everything upside down is going to rock your world. You'll never be an expert. If you think that thriving is all about, man, I'm going to make up in the right, and it's going to be, everything is going to be great, and I'm going to arrive at some point, you're in the wrong place. Please stop urban ministry now. Now. Forget what you've read. In an urban context, that doesn't exist. I want to talk about a few things, but here's what we're going to do. I'm going to define thriving, surviving, so that we can wrestle with those words. I like the dictionary a lot. When you can't read, you learn to like it. So I remember when I first started like reading this stuff, and like I'll get words, it'll be like, I can't even think of a word, but it can be a silly word or a place. Like, bro, the first time I went to like China, I didn't know where China was on a globe. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm excited to come back tomorrow. Like, you know what China's? Like, way over there. You know what I'm saying? With words, I'm looking at it, like, man, this is exciting. You know, but anyway. So when I look in dictionaries, these words, they stick out to me and they help me, because then I don't lean to my own understanding about what they mean. I can't do it. I have to exegete everything. Everything, every word, and it just makes me excited. So I like, so we'll define that. And I'll offer a few nuggets. Again, these are going to be very practical. I'm not going to get into programming and systems. I'm just going to say, well, my wife and I, she couldn't be here. She's back at the hotel sick, but I was hoping she could be here because she has a wealth of knowledge to share. But, I'm going to try to be her. I'm going to share a few nuggets that we've learned over the years. And then what I would like to do is just take about 15 minutes. And I don't care what it is about urban ministry. I'm an open book. If I don't want to tell you, I'll tell you. I don't want to tell you. All right. So we can talk about any other. Did I ever kill anybody? Just don't ask me that one. That sucks. No, I get that question a lot when I go to like jails and detention. It's crazy. So I'm going to define thrive. In the Corinthian dictionary, thrive is this: to prosper, flourish. You can go to the next one. Prosper, to flourish. Right? This is a good, just a good goal for any sane person. You get what I'm saying? There's nothing wrong with this. This is perfectly fine. Thriving is perspective that many church planning, church health materials would speak of and say, man, you should be pursuing to thrive. Up and the right, you should, you know, healthy things, we heard these terms, healthy things grow. Healthy things grow, and we hear all this stuff, right? And you should look to flourish. You shouldn't look to be the same place where you are, where you were last year. That's just sane people think that way, right? This is a great aspiration, but I would say that if we're defining, if we're using the metrics that we typically use, what we'll find is that urban ministries will rarely make it to thrive at the level we're trying to compare apples with avocados. We'll never make it. We need to compare apples with apples. The urban context with the urban context. How many mega churches do you find in the hood? I'm talking about smack dab in the hood, bro. So how many churches over 200 do we find in the hood? Right? How many churches over 150? Currently, world impact, what you're going to find is majority of churches are going to be 90 or under. That's kind of like the American, what we find in truth, the size of the church in America. So why are we registered? Like, man, you got to reach capacity. You got to get to this place. So you got to get over 200. Based on what metrics? Is that thriving? Based on what? What context? So what if you have 70 people? What if you have 40 people? What if you have 45 people? If you're still trying to thrive on that definition, based on a metric that has nothing to do with you, and I'll get to that in a second, if you're serving an urban context, nothing to do with you, then you're shooting at the wrong target. You ever see that guy? I forget the guy's name, but it was during the Olympics years ago. He was like, I started picking up bow. I'm not a hunter yet because I haven't shot anything, but I started doing a cold, like five below and shot nothing. So the dude, he's sitting there and he shoots this thing, hit the bullseye, like smack on, and everybody's like, ooh, ah. The reason why is because he hit the wrong target. What if you're aiming at the wrong target? Oftentimes, and I'll say this, and I'll get this over with, but oftentimes, a lot of what we read and what we've heard is not written from an urban perspective. Because they're always asking myself and Ephraim and Phil Jackson to Urban D, they're asking us to write it. I'm telling you, I remember one time I was invited to go to what's the name of the place? It was the Navigators and Barna. These the two weird people to get together, discipleship and these research nuts. They get together and they invite me to this castle that the Navigators have. And you go out there, this castle way out there, you can't breathe because it's in Colorado. And then you go out here and you're doing this thing. And then, so what they did, they revealed what's known now as, it's called the estate of discipleship. And then it's disgusting what we've done with the church. You know, when you know that only one of five Christians are actually making disciples. That's a whole separate seminar. But I'm sitting there and listening to it. I heard it. The dude from Barna gets done. I'm there, obviously, because I'm the urban dude or whatever. And so I said, well, I'm the urban dude. I'm here. You here. I need to ask you a question. I said, so how much of your data is based on the urban, on the hood? I asked Dexter the same. He invited me to come help to get the information. What I'm telling you is a lot of time when we're reading the materials, they're not written. In fact, Barna invited me to come. Said, well, maybe I get it. They were saying, well, man, you come and help us then. And I need to take that. But what I'm saying is a lot of times when we're looking at up and the right may not have, nine times out of ten has nothing to do with you in the urban context. It wasn't written from your perspective. It wasn't written by you or for you. Can we get that over with? Cool. So that's why I want to talk about survival. Survival is often not heard from a positive light. But I don't know if it is positive, but I just want to give you the definition and you decide. Let's go to survive. The dictionary. Continue to live or exist, especially in times of danger or hardship. You tell me, if you've been doing urban ministry more than 2 days, does that not define urban ministry? See, but if you take this context and you try to explain it, it's like, no. You know, I'll never forget my DS, he came to me, and they always concerned about me and my wife and what we're doing, how we're doing. It was Kyle Ray, he came and he finally talked to my DS. It's like, bro, maybe that's the way that they live. Because they worry about my heart busting because of the pressure of what we do, because we're in the mix. When gang stuff happened in Grand Rapids, I'm called. They don't, when things are happening in the school, they can't fix it, they call the church. Right? They should, right? And they call us. And so we're doing all this stuff. We're all over the world. We do all this thing. Like, man, it's like, bro, maybe this is normal. It is very different. It's rare that we'll use this word survive in a international missions place. But in domestic missions, in domestic urban ministry, we would never say wrestle with the tension of being between surviving and thriving. But in any other ministry that's going in, that are in under-resourced communities all over the world, this is where we sit. We haven't figured out what to do with the urban context. And I'm trying to tell you that it is between those two, the thriving and surviving, that we exist. You with me so far? Um, I mean, I'm talking to the choir, so I'm just, I like preaching to choir, so I just, you know what I'm saying? Ha ha ha! Urban is different, not better. Not worse. Who'd you say that? You know, you got your cats tipping, toeing around it. You know what I'm saying? I never forget, it was a well-meaning, wonderful, non-urban ministry, mono-ethnic church dude, wonderful friend of mine, all this stuff. And I was doing something similar to this, and I'm talking, and he was just, I could feel him, he was fidgeting and twitching, and he was just so sick of me using the word urban. Like somebody says black. I'm like, no, there's no difference. Like, yeah, it is, bro. I'm black, you're white. Difference doesn't make it bad. One's not better. One's not worse. It's just reality. Let's just say it. It's different. But he said, there's no different. I'm like, are you serious right now? It's like telling my brother, like, there's just no different in urban and rural. You'll slap me in the face. I'd be ready to box. But you'll slap me in the face. Like, bro, are you serious right now? No, there's difference. Let's just say it's different. And it's okay. But if it's different, then we have to approach it from a different perspective. I believe that's part of the problem. Because once we recognize that it's different, then we have to stop doing what we're doing and readjust how we're doing it and how we're going after it. It's different. So now I've got off my soapbox, maybe. I will give you a few things that we learned. Again, I don't... Talk to me later. I would love to talk to you about all the systems and stuff. I got workshops. I got more document white papers than you would ever want to see. And I would love to share it with you. It would be really exciting. But I just want to give you some practical stuff that we learned, okay? I'm going to try to rip through this so we can still have our time to talk. Here's the things that we learned if we're going to sit between thriving and surviving. First one, it's a family affair. Yeah! So here's a couple of my these are my youngest babies, Tony and Aaron. That's my lady. Can't wait to go see her in a couple minutes. Got that right. And then that's me. So she graduated and stuff. My kids don't hate church. There's this bad philosophy out here. Please delete it from, if you're doing urban ministry, delete this out of your mind. Just make this make sense. We take our kids to sports. Sometimes 2-3 sports. I never heard anybody say, oh, I don't want them to hate sports, so I'm going to take them out of sports. I don't get them overly involved with sports. Are you serious? See, I understand contact hours. You look at the United Way. The United Way says that if you spend 1 hour with one loving adult, one loving student, with one student, you would drastically change the trajectory of a child's life. That's based on contact hours. Life, one life, the way God designed it, is not cool for us to be by ourselves. What I'm saying is contact hour, and an hour is an hour. So you're saying you want her to spend 30 hours doing sports. And I'm saying I want her to spend 30 hours in God's church. And you're telling me, make that make sense. Make that make sense. All I'm just saying is stop, maybe you just need to stop having a lame church. My kids have fun. Maybe your church is lame and boring. Maybe that's the problem. It's not them being engaged in church. My kid, no, these babies, I'm serious. I go out and I travel, I'm gone 15 days out of the month. You know what I'm saying? Literally, 10 to 15 days out of the month, I'm gone somewhere. They wake up at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to go with me, to set up books and do, if anybody had me speak up for them, they know they're there and they're doing it. They're traveling. She was our kids director. She does all the chefing for the church. Maybe you need to get them involved and quit having them look envelopes and give them a youth Sunday. A part of a youth Sunday because it's... I know, I get it. Y'all used to be reading this stuff. And these professional pastors' wives and pastors and husbands, pastors, husbands of pastors, you just sit back and look pretty. That doesn't work in urban ministry. It doesn't work. I'm telling you, you need all hands on deck. You need everyone fully engaged. I'm not saying take a breather, take a break, chill out. Ephraim was right, 100% right. Just chill when you got to chill. But man, the rest of the time, it needs to be a full court press. The whole family. Everybody can't serve at the same level, but everybody needs to be serving. When you don't have the structure of the family, when this family is so messed up in the hood, where are they going to see? what it looks like to serve our master, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, while you're sitting back looking pretty, twiddling your thumbs. But your kids just, like, oh, no, I'm not coming to the next 6 weeks. I ain't going to be a part of youth group because, you know, that urban youth group thing, nah, I need to go out here to the suburbs to get mine. For real? For real? That doesn't work in the hood. I'm sorry. I know, like, man, we don't want to be in the mix. My wife and I have served two decades doing this. In some of the most deadly places in the United States. And I'm telling you that we've done it, and we've had these times. You know, if you research CCDA, Coach had this time. He had to step away, come back, step away, come back. You have these times where you need to take a breather. Okay? But man, when my wife is in the mix, my family's in the mix, it's one thing, yeah, they can watch from afar and I can come home, you know, the thing, they can knock the kinks out of my iron, kind of thinking. You know, I'm out in the war, they can come back and knock the bullets out of my iron. That's cool. But bro, I've been under fire. Daily. Three of my brothers shot. People trying to kill me every day. Ain't nothing like you being on the... Grab your pistol and let's go. There's a difference between them waiting on me and I'm all bloody and I'm coming home versus us being in the fight together. Because what happens is even the great intended team, godly people will turn on you. People that are on your team, maybe I haven't experienced that. People on your team will be like, bro, I'm good. Or this person that you're like, man, you have great thinking and they're going to be with you forever. They bounce. They leave. Then you're just sitting here and you're whining. You need someone on the inside that can understand that will be like, that ain't going nowhere. That you know, I know for sure, you ain't going nowhere. We have a very transient base in urban ministry. People come and go. People are getting going to prison. People are leaving. People are relocating all the time and they're coming back. They relocate again, they come back. So people, it's going to be ever moving. That's a whole separate thing. But somebody asked me about my leadership pipeline once. How many days have you spent in the hood, bro? All of my elders, I'm the clean one. I'm talking about dudes with attempt murder cases, cuz. Prostitutes. And you're asking about my leadership pipeline and where they are in the five levels of leadership. Are you serious? Yeah. What was I talking about? Man, I got to do my meditation. Daytime meditation. Ooh. I'll get off of this, but just know that you can't commit at the level that you need to if your family, if you haven't asked your family the question. Like, man, do you understand what I'm called to do? Do you understand that my calling is our calling? I've tried it both ways and it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Man, that's so much. I'll skip over that. Ah, man. All right, stop playing the fool. If you're white, raise your hand. Oh, come on, come on. I'll put mine down. If you're white, raise your hand. Awesome, cool. He's white! Dave's white! That's my guy back there. Oh, man. I'm going to say to all my white people, stop playing the fool. I'm going to tell you what I hate. Me and Adam Lipscomb, we're good, really good friends. I mean, I'll talk about that later. But I told him, and I just sat him, I said, bro, stop. Stop. I'm so sick of white people making excuses for doing what God has called you to do. At some point, they become a them. You'll catch in a second. You lived in the hood for the last 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years. At what point will you accept that the they become a them? I'm so sick of you like, man, I don't have anything to offer. Don't you ever disrespect my Lord like that. Because if you come in your own authority, then no, you have. I don't know, maybe Jesus said, you know, don't go and make disciples of anywhere because you ain't got no power. No, he said, all authority has been given unto me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, all ethnos. He has given you dunamis. Power, you're not coming in your own authority. You're coming in the authority of the Master, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So absolutely you have something to offer, both spiritually and naturally. You do have something. Yes, oh, ask probing questions, open-ended questions. You need to do that. Like any human being needs to do that. But man, don't come here acting dumb. I don't need you in the hood if you're going to come act dumb. And you ain't got nothing to offer. For real? Bro, you've been working in corporate America, you've been doing this, you've been doing fighting this, you got something to offer. Bring it to the table, let's make us up to gumbo, you feel me? Stop playing the fool. Stop, that hyper-humility is sinful. It's not humility at all, because you're cooking it up, because you know you got something. You're lying, stop! Okay. Next one. Let me see. Stop playing fool. Cool, cool. Stick to the mission. Oh, man. By God's grace again, I need you to understand context. I own a marketing firm, okay? And so I learned marketing pretty well. I've done marketing for artists, Grammy-winning artists, churches, ministries, all over the place. And it's very difficult for me to make sure that mission vision stays in front, that everybody understands through and through. I'm an IT dude. And so certifications and understanding ISO certification, understand these deep, great details. That's my world. And it's very difficult for me to make sure that through and through our leadership team, our board and everybody, we have to make sure that we stick to mission. Let me tell you this. The longer you stay in ministry and the more diverse your ministry gets, the more you need to explain the who, the what, and the why. Because people are going to come in from all cultures, all backgrounds, and they're going to try to adjust what you're doing, because we're a hip hop church. It's very clear. We do hip hop. That's what's on the thing. You read that. So why are you telling me to pull out banjos and house shoes, bro? Flip flops. That ain't gonna happen. Because you say like, oh no, we have 30% of our church that are white people from the suburbs that used to live in the suburbs or still live in the suburbs. So now we need to be changing. No, that's not gonna happen. Find somewhere else to go. There's many churches. You have to be certain what God has called you to do. That's what I like about the Wesleyan Church. Like it, love it or hate it, God has given us. And I know all these screwed up boards thinking that they're in charge. Instead of being servants and saying, no, we want to help my brother or sister do what God has called them to do, that's the way it's structured. Otherwise, I wouldn't be a part of this denomination flat out. But I love the fact that, man, God, Moses type of leadership is allowed. God has given you a vision. Carry that vision. Make it plain. Make the mission and vision plain. And then they can help you with the tactics. If you're familiar with most mission, objective, strategy, tactics, that's strategic planning, basically strategic planning process, you handle the mission, and the objective. And you let others help you with maybe the strategy and the tactics on how to get it done. But don't you hold to your chest. Close the mission. Because the more people you get involved, they're going to try to shake what you are called to do. Make that make sense. Oh, I want to be inclusive. I want to invite them in on strategy and tactics. There's a lots of place to create a myopic box for them to play. A smaller frame. Just leadership. That's the way organizations run. Man. So at the edge, we have our mission is to be the church that mobilizes individuals, families, and the urban hip hop community to be disciples of Christ, community, region, and world. Right? I'm gonna read the long vision, but we have a philosophy. We bring them in, we sit them down, we raise them up, we send them out. This is how we accomplish our mission. We're not changing that. You can do whatever you want to do, but we're not changing that. What I'm saying to you is stick to the mission. Get your family involved. That mission we have, my family created when my babies were 8. That's why they bought into it. I'm just saying. Cool. Let me go to this. Oh, man. I wish my wife was here. My wife used to work for the Kellogg's Foundation, and she's been in fund development for 15 years. So she raised millions and millions and millions of dollars. She's giving away millions and millions and millions of dollars. That's what she does. Okay? And so I get a chance to sleep with a money person. It's awesome. Laugh with me, y'all. Appreciate that. But I'm serious. So, oh, I'm sorry, 18-year-old. I'm sorry, love you. Give me a hug. There you go. Treat. oh, man. So, this is going to be on tape, Dave. I'm sorry, bro. Like, anyway, What was I saying? Forget. Oh, diversify your funding. Jeez. One of the most misunderstanding about thriving and surviving in the hood is money. Most of the cash, God has allowed me to make a lot of money in my corporate life. More than most. A lot. Okay? I was one of 15,000 people certified at Microsoft at the time, at that level, MCSC. And I own an IT firm. I own a staffing company. I made a lot of money. I know how to manage money, so quit talking to me about it. And we know how to raise a lot of money. That's what my wife does. But one of the things is that there's this philosophy about sustainability that is so counterintuitive to urban ministry. Sustainability is two parts. It's human and financial resources. If you don't have people, you're not going to be sustainable. If you're not reproducing, you're not going to be sustainable. People. Finances, if you don't have finances coming in, what happens though is that we forget from every church I've talked to, forget that they are not self-sustaining. Because if they were self-sustaining, then they wouldn't be asking any of their constituents for any money. Again, I installed the software for American Red Cross for fund development. I know, I understand it in great detail, more than I should. I get it. Constituent management, I get it. And I'm telling you, it's just that your constituency is different. When you have a median income of 18,000, you can have 50% of the people giving, and I know the 7.5% in America that give tithe and offering, I get that in average church, I get that. So let's go to 10% in America that gives. We have 40% of people giving tithe and offering. And we're still short. We're still short. We started at 10% of our funding coming from the inside. Now we finally got to a point where we're getting 60% coming from the inside. It's going to be a long time. We've been doing this thing for this particular church for a decade with a fund developer that gives away millions of dollars. We had a fund developer since day one. We have a grant writer since day one. I'm telling you, it's difficult. We have to think about it. So what am I saying to urban planters? That yes, that is all true. But bro, you stop complaining until you diversify your funding. Stop thinking that it's going to come strictly from the offering plate to do what God has, to do a God-sized vision that God has called, if it's a God-sized vision, I'm assuming that it is. And if it is a God-sized vision, you won't be able to get it out of your offering plate. If you're reaching urban, we're just reaching a lot of urban youth and young adults that ain't got no money. What we say is we reach the homeless people's kids. You tell me where that money's going to come from. You say, oh, no, you need to go and you need to do campaigns, bro. Have you ever done a campaign outside of your church? Have you ever tried? Have you ever tried to raise 60% of your funds outside of the church? 45% of your funds outside of the church? No, so shut your mouth. Imagine going to a youth department and asking them to live off their budget, their sustainable budget, what they can put in their offering plates. That's what you're in, urban people. So I'm saying it's diversified. This is what we decided to do from day one. We have multiple revenue streams. Okay? I am CEO, and I operate as a CEO. I cast vision. I handle about 10 major donors. Then our grant person, they write the grants. And then our development person, they handle the overarching vision of raising money, internally, externally. So here's our areas. Internal tithe and offering. If you haven't done online giving, you suck. It's cheap. Our offering doubled within 4 months in the hood with young people. If you don't have it, get it. And it's cheap. Events. We're just like your typical nonprofit. We do event-based fundraising. We do two of them. My wife doesn't believe in doing multiple. We just do two. We're not doing chicken dinner. We're not doing none of that. We're just going to do things that's going to raise $30,000 or more. Two of them. We do a golf outing. And we do like your traditional nonprofits. But as the pastor, the shepherding pastor, I can't be 100% focused on that. So you have to, if you get somebody that's administratively astute, you give my wife 30 minutes with them, she can give them the tools necessary, and I'll give you a strategic plan for them for free. Just tell them to do this. I guarantee you that they can do event-based fundraising. into an annual event. And what we do is we're casting vision. There's a thing called a binovine, which is used to be called making more money. It's a principle of just telling your story and allowing people to see and experience. So we let them come and see. So we do a mini edge service. We cast the vision and we tell the story. And they go around and hear all the stuff that we're doing, right? And then what we do is we ask them to be a part of it. That's what we do, right? This is a church. And we do grants. Forget what you heard, because most people talk about grants, they ain't never got one a day in their life. All these certifications to get grants, like, how many did you get? You asked me to pay $5.99 to learn how to write grants. How many grants have you gotten? Not many. So, talk to him. He knows about it. But I'm telling you, you do not have to compromise the gospel. You just have to build your premise. We've convinced the bosses and all of them that the Bible works and it's sustainable. Or they're looking for measurable outcomes. We're saying, like, hey, we were here. They're here. Here's the steps we took. And guess what? Our curriculum is the scripture. Literally. No, literally. It's a text. And I can get $10,000 to $20,000 without compromising the gospel. Mailings, we do newsletters. We have individuals, churches. We don't have one single church right now that consistently support us. This is this messed up thinking that we do. We haven't had in 5 years. Not one. Not one. I think we're moving towards sustainability. You with me? What I'm saying for you. I'm saying if you haven't diversified your finances, if you want to do a God-type-sized vision or mission, I'm telling you, diversify. I have to. And suburban church better watch out. Because if we're going to be continuing to be concerned strictly with the offering plate, the church is going to be in trouble. Mark my words. We have to think outside the box. Get younger. Man. Get younger. Most urban churches are full of old people. Stop it. Where's your legacy? You're going to die. And your church with you. Get younger. Our church, again, I'm gone. So who's running the church? Who's making those tens of thousands of true? Who's reaching those tens of thousands of people? My step goal? Yeah. So this is the S building. This is just some people from church. Go ahead, swim. This is inside the church. Can't really see nobody. Oh, this is a baptism. This was dope. Two stories crazy. Then go. But this is a reflection of our church. But just look at just look at these people, right? These are young people. Keep going. And except this guy, he's old. Keep going. Keep going. Sweet. Keep going. Cool. Keep going. Cool. Oh, whoa, wait, keep going. Sweet, diversify your funding. Boom, young, get young, there you go. Sweet, keep going. Okay, I can just tell you, they lead the stuff, man. I just figured out that I'm not smarter than a fifth grader. I'm not joking. In this context, how much do you know about this context? You just need to honor them. If you struggle with all social media, any marketing, any of that stuff, you suck. If you got more than one youth in your building, get off, get away from your pride. They have the answer. You don't. Keep it moving. This is our part of our team, our staff. I mean, we got a couple old people. That's it. Majority of our team, our paid staff is under, except this dude. And these two right here, they're the old people. They're 32. Keep going. This is our squad that literally, these dudes, he signed with the largest Christian record company in the world. First rapper. The other guy, he's not in the video, but he just produced for David Crowder. These dudes were carrying guns, bro, 6 years ago. They're literally traveling the world. They're on the largest tour on the world. This guy named Beacon Light in the world called Winter Jam. Both of them. Him. I can do this all day. They are, thousands of people are, get younger. Let them lead. Last one. Multiply. As a denomination, we're going in a good direction, I believe. Now that I kind of sort of understand. I couldn't say that me and Wayne, we talked about it. I didn't fully understand where, I still don't know, because Wayne thinks about like 10 steps further, and you have to be okay with being at 1.5. He was my mentor for about 5 years, and it was like swimming in deep water. Kind of, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's out there. And so, but when he's talking about decentralizing, even in my area, if you didn't know, I was doing urban church planning for the Wesleyan Church. And so, I doing that was cool. But I felt like there wasn't a urban urgency. You know? I felt like we just started scratching the surface. And Wayne was just like, yo, just wait a minute. This is my language. Yo, just wait a minute. Like, we're going to decentralize. So basically what we're saying is like, what we want to do is we want to get locally. We want churches in not necessarily district, but churches and regions to take responsibility for church planting. And I totally agree with that. I love it. That's just dope. But here's the tension that I have in it. Is that historically we will not plant. Diversity does not happen on accident. And if it is going to happen locally, we're not going to plant an exponential. I've done the research. I know what we're doing in urban church planting. I'm telling you that unless we in this room, and you know, you spread the word, urban ministry will die. Because if we're supposed to take responsibility and we're not multiplying, who in the world is going to do it? You can't wait for the pie in the sky and grandmama and mama to be making it happen. No. Ad love is not going to come. And then you got all this other stuff to be doing. Who's going to do it? You ain't doing it. Sparing with, I know the numbers. I'm telling you, the local church can do very simple things. When I left the denomination, we decided that we need to be about urban ministry. I still believe the denomination needs to be about urban ministry. We need to do that because we suck at it. It's just basic SWOT analysis. We need to do that. But at the same time, we said, like, we need to take responsibility. So we took our urban ministry network and we put it inside the local church. And we are willing, for free, across, as long as we don't have to travel, for free, we will talk to you about what it means to create a simple network. We did it in England. I've been in England for 2 years. And basically, we set up, they said, like, as a denomination, we're interested in planning urban ministry. We don't know what we're doing. So what we did is they haven't planted churches in 40 years. They put up a little bit of money. I'm there every other month. And we go back and forth. And right now they have an urban church planting network called Oxygen. Go just a couple pictures. Guess what? And it's all black people. The Wesleyan Church in England is the opposite. They're trying to figure out how to be more diverse and get more white folks. This dude, she is the leader. She is Wayne Smith in England. This is in Grand Rapids. They came and they did a training with them. She came and spent the summer with us. She'd be with us for 2 years to do a residency or urban residency, a contextualized residency, because residencies are not created equal. You can go to a residency that's not urban. You won't learn jack about doing urban ministry, be quite frank with you. What we're saying is like, so that's what you need to do. Stop complaining and create an urban residency. Create your own pipeline of urban leaders. Create a network in your church. Do something simple. Me, Adam Lipscomb, and Chase Dansel, three urban pastors in our area. We're not waiting for Chris. We're not waiting for nobody. We get together. We pray every Wednesday. We get together. We talk every Wednesday. We hold each other accountable. And now we're going to be moving into planting together. But that took about 2 years. And I knew Chase since he was 17. I'm saying do something. You need to multiply or your church. The movement of urban church planting in the Western church is going to die if you don't do something about it. Sorry, I took all the time. But I'm willing to stay afterwards and talk to anybody. I hope y'all got 2 or 3 things. Boom, a minute early. Thank y'all. So